Want to hear some great golf storytellers? Check out Invested in the Game, an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Each episode dives into the stories of people who have poured their time, resources, and passion into the world of golf, like Sam Hahn, CEO of Lab Golf, PGA Tour player Ben Griffin, and Nick Schreiber, the visionary behind Old Barnwell Golf Club. So why is Schwab doing a golf podcast? Because their clients don't just invest in markets, they invest in their passions too. Listen at charlesschwab.com/the game or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trade deadline coming up at 6 o'clock today. Will Stephen Kwan still be a Guardian when they start their series with the Minnesota Twins tomorrow? A lot have said no, and a lot more people in the know have said no over these last 24 hours. There's a video going around right now on the internet of Stephen Kwan waving to the crowd as he leaves. There is a caveat there. He does that almost every game. So a lot of people on the internet were going, oh my God, he knows he's getting traded. No, at the beginning and end of every game, Owen goes to just about every single Guardians game. He will tell you he does a wave to the crowd. It's almost like the bleacher creatures.
When they win at home, because obviously he's in left field when that happens. And there are times that maybe he's making a play. But I have seen him wave goodbye in the past. He waves hello at the start of every game because we're out in left field.
Yes. So he is a cordial young man to the fans.
He's known as a waiver.
Yes, here in Cleveland. But he could be on his way out, whether or not that's a good or bad idea. Let's bring in David Sampson, who joins us on the show. Major League Baseball could have a lot of problems on their hands coming up here shortly over the next couple of years. And David is the host of the Nothing Personal podcast with David Sampson. You can find it wherever podcasts or you find your podcast. David P. Sampson on Twitter. He's on the fan hotline. David, good morning to you.
Good morning. It's deadline day.
It's a scary day for a lot of people. I'm upset, David. You've been in front offices before, so you see this with a different head, and you always bring in a different perspective, and that's why we love having you, okay? I'm upset because I've been saying since the wintertime, probably Emmanuel Clase is going to be gone. Then we have this happen where there's gambling allegations, and now they've kind of gone from the Emmanuel Clase, who everybody's saying they could have got a haul for. Great. Now they're going to Stephen Kwan, who's under team control for another couple years. And I'm thinking, I hate to make this analogy because it sounds cheap, David, but I'm going, you guys just sound like a bunch of problem gamblers who are trying to chase cards and blackjack here all of a sudden, and I don't like it.
I understand. You're sitting at 54 and 54. You're thinking to yourself, hey, man, we're only 2.5 back. All we got to do is climb past Seattle and Texas, and we're there. It's ours for the taking. Now, don't worry about the object in our rearview mirror, which is Kansas City. They're a half game behind us, but we've got this. But don't you want your front office to actually be smarter than that and not be a fan and actually realize when is the right time to push and when is the right time to pull? You're dealing with a major issue with Clase that could end up with him being suspended for life. That is the reality of that situation. And you are looking at your system and you look years into the future. You think to yourself, who are the assets who we're going to use to be good now, but we're also going to use to get the pipeline refilled so we can have our next window where we can be great. And the Guardians have had numerous windows now, no World Series, but numerous windows over the decades of greatness and numerous windows of, hey, it's not our time. They've had a window right now, but I think they view this window to be currently closed. So what do? You take the valuable people. You can be David Sampson and run a team and trade people at their low, but that's only going to get you one ring, and then it's going to get you criticized. Trading people at their high is going to get people to say, wow, are you sure you know what you're doing? But you get the last laugh when your next window opens. And Stephen Kwan is the perfect example of that. If you can get somebody to overpay, anytime you can do that, you're smart to do it.
All right, David. So that is, I think, logical, everything you just said. But we are dealing right now with an emotionally wrought fan base that cannot believe that they slashed payroll following an ALCS run, that they thought they were contenders, and then with the trades in the offseason, the unwillingness to spend any more money to hang on to guys, that now fans don't care about how the last 10 years have gone. They don't care that they've got like the fourth most wins in baseball in that time. All they care about is the fact that the owner looks cheap in this situation.
I get it, but you have to understand that's why they're fans and not presidents of baseball operations or presidents of teams. You can't look at things that way. And if you look at the success that you've had over the last decade, it's nothing to sneeze at. Hachu. It is the playoffs are so random. Getting to October as many times as possible is what you want to do, regardless of the outcome, because so many things have to happen to actually get through and win the whole thing, as you all very well know. Your whole fan base knows. But don't you realize that being emotional, And I'm accused of being made of wires and not being emotional at all, and it's had a deleterious impact on my personal life. I get it. However, if you are unemotional, you're able to actually make rational decisions. When you're emotional, ration goes out the window, and you can end up costing yourself, not just today, but also tomorrow. And you got to have front offices who don't do that.
David Sampson joining us right now on the hotline. So the fact that the team does have Kwan under team control, does that change the state of affairs here? The fact that they can still have him, especially with the arbitration years, they can still have him on a very, very valuable contract. And It does seem like, you know, that work stoppage is kind of, the potential work stoppage is kind of hovering in a few years. Does that change the dynamic for any of this?
Oh, we're certainly thinking about that in the front office. You have to. The collective bargaining agreement ends at the end of next season, and the likelihood of a work stoppage is high. There will be a lockout right in December of 2026. And the question is, will there be missed games, unlike last time when they delayed the season there and the World Series went into November and everyone still played 162? There could be missed games. How many, we don't know. But when you're building your team and thinking about your window, You do take the CBA into account, but mostly you take team control and payroll into account. And when you say it's a negative, he's got extra years of control, why would we move him? Those are the players you really look at moving, because if you wait too long, take a look at the returns yesterday on some of the trades. Duran from Minnesota, what a return they got from Philadelphia because he's got more control. People say the Mets overpaid for Tyler Rogers. I get it. But what the Phillies had to give to get Duran was far greater. Now, Duran may be a better pitcher, but what's more important is he's got more years of control. So when they're in the market with Stephen Kwan, and the reason why you didn't see anything happen yesterday, at best what will happen if he's moved, it'll be closer to the end of the day because Cleveland's going to have to win the trade. And you may not, as fans, think they've won it because definitionally you've traded Stephen Kwan with team control, therefore we lose. But then you will get the players back who will be part of this next phase of Cleveland winning that allows you to say, hey, we got the fourth best record over 10 years, which means there'll be another opportunity with another group of guys. You just can't get married to your own players and wait too long to trade them. Trust me, I know this. I've done this. It doesn't work.
But David Sampson joining us on the show, I got a guy in Jose Ramirez who's, what, 32 years old now, Tone? 31, 32 years old. He ain't going to be around forever. And he was the one who took the discount, which is obviously flies in the face of any sort of logic of any other team. And now it feels like he's just beholden to the club instead of building around him.
Well, I guess he could always pull a Devers. He could say some bad things about the front office and decide not to play and then force a trade. I kid you. I also do question, you say take a discount. I've yet to meet a player who takes a discount. Someone wrote me recently, hey, Seth Lugo took a discount to stay in Kansas City. I laughed. That was not a discount by any stretch whatsoever. I don't throw that word around as often as others do.
So he couldn't have gotten more if he were to be traded and then signed somewhere else?
You don't know. There are many players who will say a bird in the hand is better than two in the bush. He likely was tampered with and did some talking, which all players do with other teams. Hey, where do you see my market? If I were around, what kind of numbers, what kind of years are we talking about? There are players who want to get a deal done, worried about lack of performance, worried about lack of health, worried about all sorts of things where you make a decision, hey, can I live with this amount of money? The answer, of course, is going to be yes. Versus getting an extra $20 million. What will that mean after taxes? What's the difference in my life, et cetera, et cetera. But I wouldn't use Jose Ramirez as the poster child for discount. But I also wouldn't say that the Guardians have wasted the Ramirez years by any stretch. or that trading Stephen Kwan is saying that, wow, we've wasted Jose Ramirez, because we just had this conversation on your show, and I remember it. I think I remember it well, when you traded Lindor. Do you remember when Lindor was let go? You didn't bring him back, and everyone said, it's panic time. How can we recover from this? And guess what? You did. You recovered, and you actually ended up playing postseason games. There's always next, and very often owners who can act like fans, and fans forget that concept. There's always next.
David Sampson joining us. Now we get into the fun part of this discussion, because I personally have been called a Dolan apologist.
I called him Anthony Dolan.
He called me Anthony Dolan, which I thought was a cheap shot.
It was.
But he... the Dolans have obviously, they have the low payrolls. That has been a staple now in recent years. The only time they really had a decent payroll was when they were going for the World Series in 2016 and 2017 the following year. Since then, it's been a slash payroll. So I have defended them in terms of the finances of baseball. They lost their local TV deal because of the regional network collapse. That was like 50 to 60 million this year. And that doesn't look like it's getting solved anytime soon unless baseball changes dramatically. So the one thing that gets thrown in my face the most is that they could spend more. They don't open their books. We don't know what their situation is when all is said and done in the final accounting. So you kind of have a working knowledge of what these teams truly have. Could they spend more? Should we expect them to spend more?
Two different questions. Do you think that your station could spend more on your salary?
Answer the man, Tone.
Well, I don't want to let you right into our negotiations. But yes, yes.
I'm just,
yes.
Right. So is there ever an employee who believes that an employer can't spend more on them? And I've got a special surprise for you. Every employer could spend more on employees, every single one of them. And that's not the threshold.
Want to hear some great golf storytellers? Check out Invested in the Game, an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Each episode dives into the stories of people who have poured their time, resources, and passion into the world of golf, like Sam Hahn, CEO of Lab Golf, PGA Tour player Ben Griffin, and Nick Schreiber, the visionary behind Old Barnwell Golf Club. So why is Schwab doing a golf podcast? Because their clients don't just invest in markets, they invest in their passions too. Listen at charlesschwab.com/the game or wherever you get your podcasts.
I ever look at. So could a team have a higher payroll? Of course. The question is, what is the responsible payroll to have, given what your revenues are, given what your debt capacity is, how much money you can borrow to cover any operating deficits you have, whether or not you need to actually secrete money away through profit to be spent on stadium upgrades or other things that need capital expenses that are required throughout your organization. There's so many factors involved in what your final payroll is. You go through a huge budget and you plug in a payroll and you see where you're going to be with assumptions of ticket revenue and broadcast revenue. And then you get completely screwed when your revenue numbers don't happen and your actuals are less. And if you cannot get your expenses in line, all of a sudden you're running a terrible business. And so all employers keep a cushion, because you have to, because your job is to run your company. It's not to pay a specific employee or a specific number of employees or to do certain things that your employees wish they could do, like give you better food or better lunch or better benefits. They've got the whole company to worry about, where employees are worried about themselves, rightly so. So it really is two different ways to look at it. So yes, do I think they could spend more? Yes. Do I think they should spend more? My answer is an unequivocal no, and I'm not shilling for the Dolans. Trust me, I haven't on nothing personal, and I won't. But what I do shill for is smart front offices and people who are understanding of what it is to run the totality of a business, and the Guardians do that.
So the big story in the last few days, Bryce Harper confronts Manfred in the clubhouse and basically says, over my dead body, any talk about a salary cap. Now, Cleveland baseball fans, we have wanted a floor as well as a cap. We want this to look like the NFL. We understand why the players union wouldn't want that. My question to you is, are we sure that the owners are all on the same page on this? Because I can imagine that the Dodgers and Mark Walter don't want the same things as Paul Dolan here in Cleveland.
Well, for sure. But when we talk about cap sports, I would like to point out, would you agree that in the NFL where there is a cap, that there are teams who stink and who are tanking and who just don't perform during the course of a particular course? So it's not a matter of payroll disparity that causes bad teams, because in a capped league, in a floor league, where the collar between the top and the bottom is smaller than in baseball, you still have teams that are bad. So a salary cap in baseball is not going to be the panacea. A salary floor is not going to be the dream come true where all of a sudden you're going to be spending $200 million and you'll never lose. It's going to be the same where you're going to have years and windows that are good and years and windows that are closed and bad. In terms of owners being on the same page, Bud Selig, as the ninth commissioner, was very, very serious about keeping owners on the same page, keeping owners quiet. We were not allowed to talk about labor. We would get in so much trouble. Bud would fly to your house and drop a Diet Coke on your head if you talked publicly about labor. But owners are doing it now. David Rubenstein of the Orioles has talked publicly. Bob Castellini, Dick Monfort of the Rockies has talked about the need for a salary cap. And what they're really saying is that they want to make sure that their fan base understands that they want what they want, which is to have hope every single season. But that's not really how it works in sports. You can't have every team in a league with the same level of hope each season. It's not how it works. The reason why we say that is it's aspirational, but it's not realistic. And we think that fans want to hear it, or media members want to hear it. Hey, we're in a league where anyone can win at any time. Well, no, it's not going to work that way. What we do want is a premium on smart. And the way baseball is, even today, there's a premium on smart. You can have the Mets not win with a high payroll. You can have the Dodgers, who have been great with Andrew Friedman, winning with a high payroll. And you can have teams with a low payroll winning. You just said the Guardians, last decade, fourth best record. But then you said since 17 they haven't spent. Well, wait a minute. Do we want wins? Do we want spending? What do we want? To me, I always want victories because I want a chance to win a ring.
David Sampson joining us, host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson, former MLB executive here on the Fan Hotline. David Blitzer, he looks like he's an owner in waiting. Could he get cold feet? Could he get second thoughts because of the possible work stoppage and because of the television deals being up in the air?
So I think the latter is a little more possible, but if you know Blitz, he's not the cold feet kind of guy. And he, when you buy into sports that you're subject to collective bargaining, and through the course of ownership, there's going to be labor issues, labor stoppages. Look at the NFL. And NBA, they went through a great period of time where there were work stoppages all the time. Baseball's actually had an amazing amount of labor peace, shockingly, for that sport. The real question is, when you look at the value of teams, I believe that Blitzer thought that MLB teams would increase in value more than they have. And that's Rob's job as commissioner, to get those valuations up higher the way they have been growing in the NBA and in the NFL. And when you've got the last few deals like Tampa rumored at 1.7, Baltimore at 1.7, when the Marlins can't even get back their 1.2 that they spent in 2017 when Bruce Sherman and Derek Jeter bought the team, that's a bigger issue that Blitzer would be thinking about, but he's not going to shy away. He's part of a deal right now, and he will take over. He will be the control person, and I think it will be great for Cleveland, though I don't think that the Dolans have necessarily been bad for Cleveland.
But David, what I find interesting is, obviously, we monitor all these sports, and we are in a place like Cleveland that's considered in baseball a small market, and yet Jimmy Haslam has more cash spent in the NFL than any other owner over the last 4 years. In fact, they spent over $320 million last year on payroll. Then you have Dan Gilbert. Dan Gilbert, they are the only team, the Cavs, right now, the only team that has breached the second apron in the NBA. And it looks like when these teams buy in, when these owners buy in, they are so eager in the NFL to spend whatever they need to, in the NBA to spend whatever they need to. But yet in baseball, I do not see these owners lining up to buy Major League Baseball teams that are willing, with a few exceptions like we saw with the Mets, and obviously what we are seeing, what we did see with the Padres, what we've seen with the Dodgers. We have not seen the same number of owners who have that fervor to come in and just throw funny money around. What does that tell us about the state of baseball, especially with the work stoppage around the corner?
Well, it certainly tells us that in the National Football League, you're getting a percentage of national revenue that gives you the ability to spend, and how tremendous that is. You saw when the Packers released their numbers, because they're a public company, the shareholders have no power at all other than they get to say that they're a shareholder. But you got to see that when you're getting distributed hundreds of millions of dollars, it makes a difference. And it just isn't the same in baseball. Baseball is very healthy, $11 to $13 billion industry. But in terms of team distributions, it's just not the same. And in terms of your broadcast revenue, that's all part of it. NFL, remember, is all national revenue. In baseball, it's been all local revenue. And when your local revenue disappears, when you're not drawing, and when your TV revenue disappears, you have to change the way you operate. And by the way, side note on the Cavaliers, the second apron is so usurious that teams don't want to live there. If they touch it, they get in it, then they start realizing, oh my God, this is an absolute ridiculous waste of money. We can't do it. So I will bet you, and this is not anything against the Cavaliers, they're not going to live in that apron for long, in that second apron, because it's not smart to do, and they will wake up and realize that the juice is not worth the squeeze. So I don't think that we ought to compliment the Cavs for being in the second apron. I think, frankly, teams have shown you can win championships and build dynasties without getting into the second apron.
All right, I want to pivot. Really appreciate your time, and you've been very generous. But quickly with the NFL story, you've been all over the collusion story. And the funny thing is, it has its origins right here in Cleveland with the Deshaun Watson guaranteed money. So why did it seem like a judge was willing to listen to the argument about collusion, but not go far enough to actually penalize the league and its owners for carrying out what looked to be a bunch of collusion with their activities?
Well, what the judge in that grievance, what the arbitrator in that grievance said is, listen, there's enough here that would indicate to me that there could be collusion. I just don't have the proof of it. But what I can tell you is, when we see idiocy as a team president, we don't want to imitate it. When you see A-Rod get a contract from the Rangers that is so outrageous, because you know there was no runner-up bidder that was even close to that, you don't say to yourself, oh, I guess that's the market. Or when you see Ohtani get $700 million over 20 years, because it is over 20 years, not 10, you don't say, oh, that totally makes sense. When Deshaun Watson signed, did each owner individually decide, I'm not giving $230 million? The argument is not about fully guaranteed. That is an absolute mistake in how we're analyzing this. It's about the total guaranteed at signing. Whether that's the total amount of the deal or not, look at the total number that is guaranteed upon signing. And what the Browns did is they guaranteed $230 million upon signing. Now, Deshaun could have made $400 with roster bonuses and off-season appearances, whatever. But $230 that minute guaranteed was a number that no one had seen and no one thought was a smart number, especially for Deshaun Watson, but in any case wasn't smart. And so what you have is Lamar Jackson, you've got the other quarterbacks who were mentioned, and saying, well, Russell Wilson, give me a break. No one values Russell Wilson at that number, nor should they. He's not deserving of it. And so that's not collusion when owners are smart. What collusion is when owners get together, and baseball got penalized for this before I was in the sport, when you get together and outwardly, publicly to each other say that we are not going to sign players over X dollars, and if we've got a deal with a player, we're going to tell you that we have a deal so you know what the number is before you negotiate with your own player, that's collusion. That's when grievances are won, and that's not what happened here.
David Sampson, follow him on Twitter, at David P. Sampson on Twitter. I already had to tweet at you, David. I didn't like what you said, but it wasn't like you weren't telling me the truth. I appreciate your candor and your time very much. We hope to have you again soon.
I look forward to it. Have a great day. Thank you.
You too, David Sampson.
If you love golf or just great storytelling, you've got to check out Invested in the Game, a new original podcast from Charles Schwab. Each episode highlights remarkable people who have dedicated their time, energy, and heart to the sport. You'll hear from voices like Sam Hahn, CEO of Lab Golf, PGA Tour player Ben Griffin, and Nick Schreiber, the visionary behind Old Barnwell Golf Club. Now, you might be wondering, why is Schwab doing a golf podcast? Well, you might already know Schwab from their five other podcasts covering investing and the markets. Quick plug, you can find those at schwab.com/podcasts. But this one's different. Invested in the Game goes beyond finance into something many of Schwab's clients are deeply passionate about. Golf. Schwab has supported the game for decades through events, promotions, and sponsorships at both the pro and collegiate level. This podcast is their way of sharing the incredible stories behind the game. Listen now at schwab.com/the game or wherever you get your podcasts.